And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi, I'm here, yes.
And we are in Juneau, Alaska, as of this moment, as part of our early summer trip out to the northwest and points really far north. We're continuing the story where we left things with our friend Greg Newby, who had just run a 135-mile race within 48 hours called the Denali 135, which took place on the Denali Highway.
Yeah, and it was a multi-day event. So that was just an amazing adventure with this camping facility and ability to take care of someone who's doing this just feat of endurance. So we recuperated from that a little bit. It took a little bit of time.
And we found ourselves in this really cool town called Tahkeetna in Alaska. And that, I think, is where we left off with our journeys.
And it is an incredible little town. We had a lot of conversations there already, talked about so much of the interesting things that it had to offer, what it reminded us of, and got some great tips and insight from people there. In fact, there was a reception after the day after the race, so everybody got some rest and talked to really cool locals, people that knew the area and were able to clue us in about other destinations in our journey as we were moving on from Tahkeetna.
Yeah, so Tahkeetna was basically our cast-off point to start heading back towards Whitehorse, which is where Greg is from right now. And we had to bring this RV back across Alaska into the Yukon. And it wasn't quite as simple as we were hoping, because this RV needed some work. We thought it was a gas thing. We talked about this before. We thought it was simply a question of getting unleaded Supreme or Premium, whatever you call it, the higher quality fuel into the engine, and then maybe it wouldn't be lurching so much. And it seemed to work for a little bit, but then, especially while you were driving on the way back, we noticed that the engine just was not working out very well at all, especially going up hills, but eventually flat surfaces and even going down hills, it was lurching. You were the one driving at the time, and I recall that you were quite frustrated.
It was kind of just difficult, because it's not a vehicle that I maintain or own, really. I mean, we'd been kind of signed on as mechanics to keep it going, but it hadn't given us this much trouble.
Yeah, this was really something insane.
Oh, I know. It it took a long time. There was a lot of windy roads. There's some elevation. Just getting to Tok was a difficult thing, and I had the last part of that driving sharing that we did. So it just basically, I think by that point, had been started and stopped, and we had run a bunch of chemical additives through and basically driven really, really incredible long distances to get there with a lot of road that was uneven and so forth. And that was just a full tilt, just in time kind of arrival. No matter how much I pressed on the gas or did any kind of maneuvering, it would just reach a point where there was no power. So that was just really difficult. We thought it was a fuel problem. Well, we had a lot of suspicions, but not a lot to go on. And it's just it's really important to keep going. And I tried as much as I could, but I kind of needed to relinquish the responsibility and let some other people who had a little bit more familiarity. Greg had already done some work.
Well, I mean, let's set the stage here. You were driving this massive vehicle. It was dying as we were driving. We're in the middle of nowhere. We have no cell reception whatsoever. There are no towns. There's nothing. So pulling over by the side of the road, and there's not much of a side of the road to pull over onto, that really wasn't something that I saw as an option. So we really had to keep going and, you know, hope for the best. And I remember, you know, we're heading towards this place called, I think, Glen Allen in Alaska as kind of the halfway point between our destination for the day, which was a city called Tok, T-O-K. And I remember we were like limping into this place called Glen Allen. We were still many miles away. I was watching the mileposts on the highway, and they would get up to like 60 or 70. Every 10, I would celebrate. Like, wow, we finally made it. There's only this much left to get to Glen Allen. And then you said that you thought maybe we were running out of gas on top of everything else, because we had a gas gauge that worked well, you know, when it was full, and then it went down, you know, three quarters and a half. It kind of skipped over the quarter and just went right down to E. So we didn't know for sure if we had any gas, if we were about to run out of gas. And we were just trying to get to this place called Glen Allen, which is really not much more than an intersection, but it had a gas station because we had stopped there once before, and we were hoping we could make it to that gas station and reassess the situation then. Do you remember that, Kylie? Remember when you were driving and saying, I don't know if we can make it, and you know, we might be running out of gas? And just that feeling in the middle of Alaska, in the middle of nowhere, wondering if we were going to make it to that intersection.
Oh, I know. Yeah. And even that, I think, was too close, just because we had already, I believe, used one can of the reserve gasoline. So we had like one small container left. We had some empty ones, but there wasn't even any spare fuel, so we really would have been stuck, and that wasn't going to be a good situation. But we eventually found our way to this place that we had been and fueled up before on the way. So on the way back, we were able to stop there and reassess the whole thing with some full tanks, a tank that we actually knew was full. And also we stumbled into some food that it was kind of odd.
Yeah, it was like for some reason they have Thai restaurants in the weirdest places in Alaska, and this intersection was one of them. Had this Thai, it was extremely expensive too, like, you know, $60 for an entree, ridiculous amounts, but it was the only food we had, so it was really, really good. It was also very hot, I remember. And the other thing about that intersection, which is really bizarre, is there's a Radio Shack there. Well, there isn't really a Radio Shack there, but there's a big Radio Shack sign that was never taken down. So that's how we know the place. We've been there before. It's always good to come back to a place you've been before when you're returning. So it felt like we were coming home. It was just a damn intersection, but it had a Radio Shack sign, it had Thai food, and it had gas. And we thought that would save us, putting premium gas into the RV, filling it up. I think you at one point had said that it was a good idea to drain the tank as much as possible of what might be bad gas and put in good gas. And that's certainly what we did. And it was our hope that we would then be able to make it to Tok on the good gas and not have the lurching problem. But that was not to be, was it, Kyle?
Well, yeah, and because of some of the additives and things that had been tried when we were sort of refurbishing the van, we had a suspicion that it might have water, it might have, oh, geez, anything in the fuel tank. So by that time, if you're running out, of course, maybe the dregs, right, whatever's in the bottom is causing a problem. So a lot of suspicion around like a clogged fuel filter because you've got no power. And so that might have been suspicious. But we couldn't certainly do that right at a gas station. You can't work on it there. So it was more of the same, really, but Greg was behind the wheel.
Greg was behind the wheel at this point. He had had more experience driving this crazy RV to that point, so he kind of limped us all the way back to Tok, and boy, that took a long time, but it was great to see signs for the little community of Tok as we got closer, and when we made it there to that RV park, it really felt like we had accomplished something. That, we had so much more to go to get to Whitehorse, but at least we had a place we could sleep. At least we had a place we could park the RV. At least we had a place where maybe the next day we could fix it or do something, because there were auto parts stores, there were even mechanics in that village, And it was our hope that the next day we could do that. But first, we had to get food that night. And as it turned out, we had just missed the one restaurant that was open. They had closed maybe 15 minutes before we got there. They directed us to a bar next door. And I was not really feeling like that was the best idea to go to a bar in the middle of Alaska in the middle of the night. But we did. And we walked in, felt very uncomfortable, very unwelcome. I'm wearing a black trench coat and a gay t-shirt, kind of feeling like that's not going to be looked upon favorably. Instead, though, I was really, really surprised because the people there were super friendly. And in fact, it was even suggested when we said that we were looking for food, I was suggested that we try these wings. And the wings were actually a bit of a challenge. They were super hot, spicy wings. And if you could eat all 10 wings, then the wings were free and you got a beer. And somehow Greg talked them into having both of us take that challenge. And it was quite a challenge.
Yeah, we were going to order hot wings, and Greg found the challenge. And we ordered those, and the people at the bar were, there was an interesting game. I think it's pull tabs were being played. The bartender was kind of busy with that. Distributing that, which was interesting, and so on.
Well, I mean, the guy was sitting at the bar talking about the wings. I just thought he was another person at the bar. Turned out he was the cook. So when he was talking about the wings, he was talking about his wings and how he took pride in making them. And it was a challenge to see if anybody could finish them. And apparently it was a big deal if anybody could finish wings like this.
Yeah, he was really, really proud of the recipe and kind of told us a little bit more about it. And basically we waited, had a beer, but didn't drink all the way. I kept a little bit. Yeah. And I think you did the same. We were being tactical because when you're up for a challenge like this, especially, out of state where, you're the new person in town, you got to really commit. So I had just enough to maybe recover from eating all of these wings. And 10 wings, gosh, that was a lot for each of us.
Well, I mean, not to get ahead of ourselves here, but we didn't know we could make it at first. I didn't know I could make it at first. I thought I could, but literally not 15 minutes after we roll into town, here we are, the center of attention in a bar that certainly looked unfriendly when we walked in, but turned out to be a very friendly place. And we just had to, come up with a tactic. And my tactic was to eat 3 wings, which were super hot. The first one was killer. But finish 3 and just wait. Wait maybe 15 minutes, take a few sips of beer, and then tackle the next 3. And the second 3, for me, were not nearly as hard to take care of. And that left me with the knowledge that I only had 3 more to go. And of course, yes, 3 plus 3 plus 3 is 9, not 10. But I was holding that information from myself. I was tricking myself. Finishing the second 3, that's the point where I knew I could most likely do this.
Yeah, I was going back and forth personally. I was like confident at first, then I was like second guessing myself, then I went back to it. I was like, no, we have a pretty diverse diet, and this guy doesn't stand a chance. I mean, deep down, I had to believe in my gut to survive, my gut for it to survive. But this whole thing, basically, I just, as soon as he put it down in front of us, like my eyes, I could feel it. Like I could feel the heat. It was physically hot. But by the time I was ready to dig in, it was cool enough, and I just took one bite. I knew, getting a taste for it, getting a taste of the sauce, and then taking that first bite would just condition me, kind of temper me. Mm-hmm. And I just had to put my nose down and go right into it.
Yeah, we were told later on that most people make the mistake of trying to do them all at once, and that just doesn't work. And the vast majority of people never make it past 3. So right away, he knew that we were different. In fact, he said we were animals, which he said it in the best possible way, and I took that as a compliment. And we finished the last, we each held the last wing in our hands simultaneously and finished it. That's never happened before. In that bar, that has never happened before, where 2 people come into town and finish off all 10 wings. And they were true to their word. As soon as we finished that last wing, two more beers were plopped onto the table, and the wings were free. And then it got even crazier. As you mentioned, there was this pool tab thing going on. This native family was there, or just friends, something you'd never see in New York. And they were just buying all these pool tabs. I didn't understand what pool tabs were, but they were having the time of their lives. And for some reason, they bought everybody in the place drinks. So the bell rings, and this wooden coin is put on the table in front of each of us saying one free drink. And we're just kind of getting used to that happening when it happens a second time. I'm not sure who bought the drinks the second time. Now we have two of these coins. We have a free beer, free food, and now two more drinks coming. I mean, how much more welcome can you possibly feel in Tok, Alaska? It really was incredible. We couldn't finish the two drinks. We still have the coins. They said we can come back with those coins, and I hope to one day do that.
Yeah, I never won a competition like that, and I've never had a round bought for, like, the whole bar while I was in that bar. I've heard of this. I'm familiar with the whole thing, but it was surreal, to say the very least, that this was happening to us. It was happening to us after this wild delirium-inducing endurance event, and then the harrowing return trip, various stages of it, as it were. With a vehicle that needed work, we were already planning on how to deal with it, but just this meal, just to eat, we were then thrust into such an interesting competition, but ended up getting a free meal, essentially, for our hearty, sturdy, pepper loving tastes, and some drinks. So that allowed us to recoup, and after that we wandered back and shared our win with Greg, who had already returned and was tending to the RV.
Yeah, and that's what you guys did the next day, is tend to the RV, which basically meant trying without success to get a mechanic to take this on, which, you know, was a long shot when you just, you know, pulling into town and asking for a mechanic to fix an RV was not going to happen in one day. But you guys came up with a plan to change out the spark plugs. And boy, I had my doubts that was actually going to work. And it seemed like such a hard job. You had to take the engine apart virtually, or just have the thing in pieces in front of you. While and of course, there was an auto parts store. They only had four spark plugs in the auto parts store. We were lucky they had those that matched the spark plugs in the RV. So that's half of the spark plugs. But you guys worked hours to replace that, and of course, the moment of truth came when we started the thing up and started to move east.
Yeah, and it was tough. It was really tough because we were working inside. We had it's similar to the 2600 van, where the inside has what's called a doghouse, and you can remove that and work. So we were able to work inside. Greg worked out exactly which plugs to remove. And in fact, his conversation with a local mechanic led him to taking on doing as many spark plugs as we could reach, essentially. But that involves opening up points on the engine that, you know, expose gasoline. We also did a fuel filter. So it was felt kind of stupid after, like, such a healthy race to be exposing ourselves to all the fumes, but we did it quickly. We just did what we had to do. There was also this matter of the air cleaner on top of it, which had to be removed anyway for the fuel filter, but it wasn't assembled properly, so that was a factor. So we got some thread and some bolts and stuff just basically fasteners and stuff to get it right, to rebuild it with the right washers and assembly so that it actually performed the way it was designed. And when we pulled the old plugs, some of the points were completely gone. So this thing had fried either long ago or from our hard driving had basically worn some of those spark plugs really completely useless, which explained a lot of our trouble.
So long story short, you guys fixed it, because from that moment on, it drove smoothly. We were able to make our way back towards Whitehorse, across the border, into Canada, down the bumpy road, And, hey, we saw a grizzly bear on the side of the road. In fact, we saw two grizzly bears. We saw a grizzly bear on one side, and then a few miles down the road, we saw another grizzly bear on the other side. I knew something was coming because a driver was coming towards us, and he flashed the lights to warn us of something. So we knew something was coming, but there was a grizzly bear just right next to the road, completely oblivious to all the people that had stopped to take pictures and look at him. He was just eating flowers or something. And that was the most incredible thing to see wildlife like that.
Yeah, they're pretty big animals. Seeing them that close, even from inside the car, you just have this like tremendous respect, I think, that this is wildlife you're witnessing just going about its day. And we took a little bit of time, which is allowed. They kind of give guidelines. You see stuff. It's like, look, like stop. Look and leave, I think, is the protocol if you see an animal like this on the side of the road. But to see them there and just take that time, especially when it went on the other side, we saw one on the driver's side where the light was just right and the wind was blowing their hair, and just them just putting their nose up and taking in what all the cars were doing and not really being too bothered or aggressive, because again, we're not encroaching, we're just observing, and then we have ultimately left. That was magical. We got pictures, we were just basically treated to what is going on all around us in these various parts of Canada and Alaska that we'd been through. So that had just a magical finish to this long ride home.
Yeah, we had seen moose earlier. I think we saw caribou or elk later on. The whole thing was just so incredibly, yeah, let's just say magical and amazing. And yeah, we made it all the way back to Whitehorse. Long, long drive, but returned triumphantly. Greg had run his 135 miles. We spent a few more days in the area, visited Whitehorse again. Great city, Whitehorse. I could spend so much time there. But what we wound up doing to leave Whitehorse, we took this bizarre train that leaves from a community that's about an hour away from Whitehorse called Car Cross. And that's short for Caribou Crossing. That's what the town was named after. And there's this little narrow gauge railway called the White Pass and Yukon Railway, I believe. And that goes from Car Cross to a place in Alaska called Skagway. It goes from Yukon through British Columbia and into Alaska. It's about, 5 hours on the train? And the train cars are from, well, they look like they're from the 1800s. They've been rebuilt or are built in that style. And it's kind of rickety. We were in the last car, so we had the absolute best view. A lot of people from cruise ships that dock in Alaska take that train as part of a tourist thing, and they tend to crowd the train, but they put them in the front cars. And people like us who bought tickets directly from the train company, we get in the end, in the last car, and get the best view that way. So it really was an incredible way to come back into the States. Scary, though. I didn't realize how scary it was because we were on top of mountains and looking way down, going over these what looked like rickety bridges. And especially if you're outside on the little veranda, is that what you call it, on the train?
I don't know the proper name, but yes, there's an observation area where you can kind of wave. It's sort of typical with old trains like that. Basically a door opens and there's a little bit of a railings that people can stand next to.
But we were on the last car, so we had the best one where we could actually look out at the back of the train and see the rail below you and wave if anybody was watching. But of course they weren't because we were in the middle of the forest.
Oh, I know. And the scenery there was just so fascinating. I don't even know where to start with the train itself being with the replica cars and the stoves in them to keep you warm. It was a very long train, And I even saw a bear next to the train when we were going through one section. I'll just say that. You go through a bunch of sections next to the lakes and up to, as you said, like an elevation of like 2,900 feet or something.
Oh, God.
It was so crazy high up. Some sections I couldn't even look over. But we were just getting started. And I looked down and I saw something like turn. It was a bear. Like the head of, just turned and looked. And I kind of like, just noticed it right in the moment and I don't even know what I had. I did. I think I screamed or pointed it out. I jolted to alerting you and you looked back just in time to see it. And it was walking across the tracks. So it basically been sitting next to the tracks and came up and crossed, which we had been told was not something that would happen.
It's exactly the opposite of what we were told. They said bears will never be near a loud train. Well, this bear was right next to the track, looking up at the train as it went by. You happened to see it because we were in the last car outside looking at that very spot. And then, as you said, the train left and we saw him crossing as we got further away. And that was not a grizzly, that was a black bear. So we saw so many different kinds of wildlife, and that just added to the list.
It was magical. Yeah, the types of things we saw, the rail line itself is meant to be sort of a teaching experience. The stops along the way allow for you to get out and explore some of the park itself and the protected areas. There's a Presbyterian church that you can climb up to that's sort of high on one of the stops. And there's an old station there with a lot of information and some videos about teaching about the history itself. But that kind of feel is kind of interesting for such a an unusual train line that has such a storied history. You learn all about this fallacy of wealth, like this promise, the dream that you can get rich quick, and
the Klondike gold rush.
Absolutely. And what all of that did, what it really meant, and logistically the types of things they had to do to survive and things that were considered back then. The people that guide that tour are incredibly knowledgeable and really, really fun with all of the tour groups that come through. And I think being a little bit further in the back, they also just check in on you, but you're mostly left to just explore and, as you said, take it in from the very last car as independent travelers.
And that brought us to the Alaskan town of Skagway. When we pulled into town, we had to wait for customs because we had crossed over into the States from Canada. Like I said, this is probably the most interesting way to come into the United States on this tourist train. For some reason, customs or DHS had forgotten to be there for us. So we had to stay in the train and wait for somebody to show up. It took about 15, 20 minutes, and we see this vehicle pull up quickly and one guy come out and get in the front of the train. I have to say, this was the easiest entry into the United States I've ever experienced, because the guy just basically looked at everyone's passport, just took a cursory glance at the face and the face that was next to it in real life, and basically said, okay, that's it. And no questions, nothing. No searches. That's the way it should be, I think. So we were there in Skagway, and we were able to spend the night in Skagway and a part of the next day. Now, Skagway is a weird place because, as I mentioned, a lot of cruise ship people take that train, which means cruise ships dock in Skagway. And the night that we were there, the first night we were there, the only night we were there, actually, we got to see what the town was like. And it was just this basically gritty Alaskan town where there were all kinds of cool places to go, a lot of bars, a lot of restaurants, a lot of old architecture, wooden planks for sidewalks and things like that. You really felt like you were in the Old West. And it was just a lot of fun walking around. Keep in mind, there was no night. The sky stayed pretty much light all night long. You know, perhaps I should mention, in case you're wondering, we're here in Juneau, Alaska, and we happen to be here on the night of July 3rd. Now, this was not planned. This just happened. I didn't even realize it when we were booking our tickets that we were going to be in this place over the 4th of July. But apparently, in Juneau, to do things a little bit differently. They set off a whole lot of fireworks the night of July 3rd. And then I think at either 11:59 p.m. or 12:01 a.m., the official fireworks go off in the harbor. That hasn't happened yet, but it will happen soon. We're going to hopefully sign off by then.
Yes. In fact, just not 5 minutes or 10 minutes ago, the barge was slowly going by in front of me, and it stopped briefly and has continued on. But I believe the barge where that display is going to be controlled from has moved out into position, and it is it's now an hour until that performance.
And we're inside our hotel room, by the way. We're not outside. We're inside our hotel room, and boy, this is loud. Okay, it's I've got some things to say about Juneau, let's talk about Skagway a little bit, because that to me was a really interesting place to spend some time in. We basically hung out in a couple of different places, went to a brewery, but they closed at 9 o'clock at night on a Saturday, and that was weird. It just seemed like the whole town kind of closed up, and there we were walking through the streets. It was still daylight. Still cool. There were people walking all over the place. But then the next day it got weird, because apparently some cruise ships docked overnight. And when we woke up and started walking around the streets, it was like a different town. It was crowded full of people who were just basically waddling all over the place and asking all kinds of questions and looking confused and going into shops and things like that. It was the other side of Skagway, I guess.
It is as though the town has two modes, and it really does. It's either on or off. When those ships, and the ships themselves dwarf the town. I mean, they make the town seem so small. They fill up the harbor. There was no less than two or three there at any one time, but they have a tight schedule. One was leaving the night we pulled in, and there was another one in its place the next day, that kind of thing. So it was very busy. And there's only a certain allotted, I guess, time, but they do have passengers just flood the town, and they're lining up in cafes, and everything's open when they're there to create this sort of economic activity around the historic town of Skagway. And it is fascinating. There's a lot around this, a lot that benefits. There's the Skagway Brewery. There's all this local feel and spirit that people are able to like get a sample of and just take it in. And it's along a road route for the border, but also this train is a border crossing, which we were using both as tourists a little bit, but also just physically to get to there. And then spend a little bit of time there. There was, I think there's a cannabis store there, which I went into and checked out, as I'm obliged to do when I travel.
They claim to be the first licensed one in the state of Alaska.
Yeah, in the entire state. So that was itself fun, because, of course, crossing the border, you don't want to bring anything like that. So I was fresh out. But reassured at what was available. When
you know what was fun, though, was watching the cruise ship passengers. We were having brunch at a place across the street, watching all the cruise ship passengers kind of just sidle over to the cannabis store and wander in. And some wander out with stuff, which hopefully they didn't bring back into the States. But it was kind of cool to see that culture blend there.
It was really interesting too, just the variety of people checking it out. And when I was there, they had just several tubs full of pickup orders and so forth. So they were doing a brisk business, and no doubt some of those people were from a cruise ship, just ordering online and able to just saunter over. So it was really relaxed, and the whole town had that feeling. Main and Broadway, and just a couple numbered streets, some infrastructure, but those darn wood sidewalks everywhere. It feels old timey. Historic bars and national park installations, a lot of preserved buildings and stuff. It really is. It's kind of interesting, but kitsch, you know, kind of just preserved in a way. A lot of spray painted rocks to look like gold nuggets, and and jewelry stores, which I think is something wherever cruise ships end up. The anticipation of people with conspicuous spending habits and money to burn, especially in places that were known for mining and minerals, it sort of fits a little bit with what they're selling in the whole idea of tourism. So there was rows and rows, tons of jewelry stores, which was sort of funny after a while, but lots to take in Skagway. And I don't think it's a place to discount.
Not at all. I would recommend it, in fact, because they have such a good sense of humor. They don't take themselves seriously. There's rainbow flags everywhere. Just felt really welcome there. And like it was a fun place. And it was also weird because, you know, the night before it was like, gunfight at OK Corral or High Noon or something like that, where he's walking down this Western village with the wooden sidewalks and the old architecture and things like that. You could walk down the middle of the street. And then the next day, you couldn't fit on the sidewalk because of all the people that had suddenly shown up overnight. So it's kind of a bizarre place to be. But we decided to leave that place and head down to where we are now, which is Juneau. And we decided to take what's known as the Alaska Marine Highway, which is not really a highway. It's a ferry system.
Indeed. And they're very much smaller ships. But there's a ferry terminal. It's right there. It's in the middle of the berths where these large ships come in. And that is for foot passengers and tourists alike to access other parts of Alaska, in this case, namely Juneau. And that's a six-hour ferry ride on a relatively new ship with both cars and people. We had staked out where to get our tickets and everything the day before, and so had a relatively easy time eventually making our way there.
And as Kyle said, you can get to all different places in Alaska, but you can also get to Bellingham, Washington, if you're willing to stay on a ferry for a few days. So that's an interesting twist that we hadn't known about before. But we decided we were going to go to Juneau that way because Juneau is a weird city in that it's a state capital, but you can't drive there. You have to either take a boat or a plane to get to Juneau because the terrain surrounding it is so rough, there is just no way to build a road or a railway or anything like that. Now, you could say Honolulu is also unreachable, but, you know, the entire state is unreachable. It's an island. This is very different. And Juneau is it's always fascinated me, and I wanted to see it. So taking the ferry seemed like a really, really good idea. It was a very pleasant ride up until the end. Because at that point, and you figured this out, Kyle, I thought that we were going to the place on the map that said Juneau. Turns out we were going to a different place where the ferry terminal was. Now, in every bit of literature that I read, every reservation, every description on Yelp and travel, whatever, a little distracting here. It was said that the place we were staying was close to the docks. Now, docks to me mean boats. That's where boats go. We were on a ferry. A ferry is a boat. It is not unreasonable to expect our boat to dock in the dock by where we were staying. And what you discovered was that we were actually docking 12 miles away. Nobody had said a word about that to us at any stage. Nobody mentioned. By the way, for no particular reason, the ferry terminal is 12 miles away from downtown. Now, downtown, there are all kinds of cruise ships constantly docking, but not the ferry. The ferry is going to be 12 miles away. We were realizing this as the ferry was docking in this strange place and trying to figure out, how do we get to Juneau? Turns out there are no buses. No buses go to that ferry terminal. It's true. No buses go to the ferry terminal. And there are no taxis because it's not worth it for them to hang out there because people either get picked up or they flag somebody down or they take Uber or something like that. Now, if you recall, a few weeks ago, we had a misadventure in Vancouver that necessitated me downloading the Uber app and being rescued by summoning an Uber since there are no taxis around. So I thought, okay, this is another instance where I'm going to have to use that app to get bailed out of a situation. And so I used the app, summoned the car, saw the little dash indicator keep flashing for like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. Finally say, nope, there's nobody available. Tough luck. So there we are in this ferry terminal, 12 miles away. There's no signs. There's nobody to tell you what to do. Everybody seems to know what to do. That's what frustrates me so much. You know, at one point, all these people were lined up. I figured, okay, they must be waiting for a bus or something. No, they were waiting for their luggage to come off the ferry. And then they all got into their cars or got picked up or whatever. Everybody knew what to do except us. And at no point in the reservation process or on any of the reviews that I read was it mentioned, yeah, you're going to have to figure this out. You're going to have to figure out how to get into town from the ferry terminal. You know, when I take a ferry to a city, I expect to wind up in that city. And we didn't do that. It was insane. And you know, I thought maybe the place we were staying, maybe the hotel we were staying at might have one of these free shuttles, because there were a few of those. A few hotels sent free shuttles to get people. That would have been nice. It turns out our hotel is not one of those. But not only that, when I called the phone number that was listed on their website and also in the email when I made the reservation, it was disconnected. The phone number to the hotel we were staying in was disconnected. It turns out when I inquired about that later, they had recently changed management and also changed their phone number and never bothered to change it in the email or on their website. Yeah, okay, so this is going really well. We wound up basically calling out to a taxi driver that had pulled in to pick up some other people. I believe, Kyle, you had the conversation with her.
Yeah, and she was just really, really kind. I basically was talking to her. She said something about, I can call dispatch for you, but I'm here for someone else. Basically asked me, did I call? I said, no, honestly, I didn't. And she kind of apologetically referred me to call dispatch, or she could call dispatch. So you seeing the number on the side of the vehicle she was driving immediately started dialing that so that we could get through to someone, and she went about trying to find her fare, whomever she was there to pick up.
And I got through to somebody, and they said they would send somebody over, and about 5 minutes later I got a call from the driver who was basically concerned that he was going to drive all the way out there and I was going to change my mind before he got there. So he was really serious, saying, I need you to make a commitment to me that you're going to stay there and not get an Uber or not get in another cab or something like that. He was quite effusive about this. And I said, look, I am never going to use Uber again because of what they did to me here today. And as far as I'm concerned, you're our savior and we will wait for you until whenever you get here. Trust us, this is going to happen. And so eventually he did show up and got us into town. But boy, that was an exercise in frustration, what we call a rough landing.
Absolutely, quintessential rough landing. I guess it's the Aluk Bay ferry terminal, which I think was relocated because the cruise ships bought the one in town. So that's and then of course,
is that what happened?
Our driver was explaining something to that effect, yes, that was part of the reasons that basically it had been relocated after the cruise ships had purchased.
I didn't pick up on that. So the ferry terminal, you know, there's a road here called Ferry Drive, right by where the ferry terminal should be. So, oh boy, this makes me hate cruise ships even more. So they basically kicked the ferry terminal out of the ferry terminal and had it relocate 12 miles away. Why is nobody else upset about this?
Upset? I don't know. I think they just needed the economic activity. I mean, that was a theme for me with being in some of these remote places, that our own presence was economic activity that was important, but also the many other industries, especially around tourism, whether it's adventure tourism and outdoor activities in a place like Whitehorse or along the Denali Highway, of course, but also just the kind of activity from these places, and Juneau specifically has whale watching. You know, that's important to people, and cruise ships coming in can take advantage of those tours and trips that are available locally and include it and offer it sort of to their captive audience, so to speak. But yeah, that was kind of a rude awakening, just realizing how this place is formed, what kinds of people are here. And the cab driver, as all cab drivers are, is incredibly interesting. He was from the Midwest and that kind of thing. So it was just a great crash course while he's just kind of lamenting about the situation, why things were happening the way they were as far as that goes. And it's easy when you think about it, I think, in retrospect, looking at the situation, to have looked into accommodations or trying to be in close proximity to where the water is and docks, so to speak, and basically not having a cross-reference for the kind of ship you're arriving on. But really, again, if you're catering to all types of travelers, you should have signage. You should have accommodations, so to speak, for people that may not be just coming on one of those more organized forms of transportation. And to their credit, they were doing some kind of renovations. There was a lot of stuff that was sort of
don't give them excuses. No, they
had cones. They had cones.
That's
there
great. That's eat. Lovely. They had wonderful cones. But no, they screwed us over. Okay, one thing that really upsets me is not getting clear directions and having everybody else know what to do except me, which everybody else seemed to know. But literally, I kept pointing this out. I was like, where's the sign? Nobody is saying anything. None of this makes any sense. What are we doing here? You know, I thought as the boat was docking that surely this is just another stop and it's going to go and continue to Juneau. But then everybody got off the boat and I realized, okay, this is unexpected, and we're going to have to figure this out. But, you know, rough landings aside, every time we have a rough landing, we have a great time afterwards, and we've had a blast in Juneau. We're going to get into that more in a future conversation, or maybe we've already talked about it on this show. I'm not even sure, because we're airing this now. I think we're at a Yankee game tonight, but we're basically trying to just remember everything that happened, and so many things happened. So many cool things happened on this trip. Juneau is certainly one of the highlights. We've been spending days just walking around and climbing things and doing a couple of touristy things as well, but mostly just getting into the spirit of this town, which if you have never considered going to Juneau, please consider going to Juneau. It's really an amazing place.
Yeah, the holiday and stuff, we just have been sort of agile. We took advantage of the public transit today because it's going to be closed tomorrow. Little things like that have been instructive so that we can experience them given in the time that we have here, but also planning for the schedule changes that are in effect because of the holidays and so forth. But it really has been fascinating. It's been strange, too. Being out and traveling, I think a lot of people are doing that right now. But most of the time when you're visiting a place, you can assimilate and sort of blend in a little bit or not be sticking out. But the thing is, you're sort of assimilating and blending in as a tourist here, because everybody is a tourist in a lot of ways. There's local bars and local places, of course, which we've checked out.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure about that, because we went to some local places and I felt like a local, and there were nothing but locals in there. There were a couple of dive bars that we were in. It was just so cool. I felt like I was in the East Village. I felt like I was in Georgetown and Seattle. There's this gritty spirit, and you can tell when someone's not a cruise ship passenger. And if you make the effort to blend in and just accept people for who they are in their hometown, you'll have a much better experience if you're not there on the 4th of July.
Yeah, and I mean mostly with the like daytime set where there's a lot of cruise passengers. In fact, when you go closer and closer, it's really concentrated. There's tons of jewelry stores. There's all this stuff for them, and they really don't even venture to the other parts of the town. Because it's just basically outside of the sort of shopping district. So it takes a while to figure out all of that out and how the town is laid out. And yeah, it was sort of daytime crowd is like that, but nighttime, it did feel like we landed in the right places. We went to some local spots that are venues as well as bars, and then also a great place to eat that we had a lot of fun just checking out and getting getting past, you know, that rough landing part and just basically taking care of ourselves and finding some really cool stuff at the same time. That stress can also turn into something really, really amazing that you want to go back to and share with other people.
First thing we did was get Russian dumplings, which was not something you expect to do in Juneau. That's just one of many, many things that we've done here. But we're going to have to sign off because, boy, we've talked our ears off. We've talked our voices out over the various travels that we have been embarking upon in the early part of this summer. It's been different. It's been cool. It's been fun.
Yeah, and this is feeling really local. There's a lot of people lined up on the sides of the streets. I mean, in contrast, we had a food today at a place where they were talking to people, like calling out their orders by who they are and where exactly they're from, because so many people are from all these different kinds of places. But this is like people parking on the sidewalk and filling up parking lots and coming in from outside of town, perhaps, and setting up bonfires on the water. It is packed. There are people everywhere tailgating. Everything is you can imagine is going on. We're just in one section of town, and you can only imagine how it is. You just see all around the water here, the activity.
This is like Berlin or Amsterdam at New Year's. It's not like something you expect in the States. And I don't think it's like this in very many places where all these fireworks are being set off by people. This is not professional. But the professional fireworks are also going to be happening right at midnight, which is unusual as well. And then tomorrow on July 4th, there's a parade through town. And like you mentioned, no buses. All the buses had notices today saying no service tomorrow. I'm just glad we're not leaving tomorrow where we have to get somewhere by bus. It's going to be fun. In fact, I think I'm going to go outside now and see how these explosions are going and get up close.
Yeah, I think it's time. It's getting close. So we'll sign off. We have more to share. And just piecing it together, we'll have to reminisce even, too, because there's so many things you want to just expound upon. But really a fun time. It's good to be out moving around and getting comfortable around all kinds of other travelers in strange places. It's really it's a good time, a good exercise, brings back lots of travel memories, and I feel really good about what's ahead for the most part. And it's good to sort of not be home, you know, not be plugged into everything. You know, we've been off and away from a lot. But right now, a lot, but not ever too far away. Right now, we're all celebrating America's independence. So
is that what this is about?
I feel a real kinship with all these people from strange places. We're all Americans in a way.
All right, put down the fife and drums there. This is 907 area code. It's awesome. It's really cool. I recommend it highly, and I can't wait to do it again. otw@2600.com. That's our email address. We will see you again next week somewhere else. Good night.
See ya, and happy 4th.
You know it's not the 4th when this airs.
Happy 3rd, almost 4th.
You have no idea what day this is going to air.
Okay, whatever. It's fine. You know, happy Independence Day, however you celebrated it.
I think it's August 1st, actually. I'm not sure about that.
Well, we're back now, and no doubt sharing ever more interesting tales from these journeys, and boy, it's ongoing. So alright, I'll stop now. There's just too much to share. We don't have time.
picture a butterfly. Gonna spend the day higher than high. You'll be beautiful confusion. Ooh, once I was you.
And you're listening to WUSB, Stony Brook, New York.